review the next case. United States versus Richard Collins. Pronounce your name, is it?
Chaffee.
Chaffee?
Yes, sir.
All right, Mr. Chaffee.
Good morning, Your Honors. Mr. Collins seeks to establish that the district court committed error when it enhanced his sentence pursuant to Section 2F1.1B6 of the 1997 Sentencing Guidelines. That section of the guidelines allows the district court to enhance the defendant's sentence if A, if the offense substantially jeopardizes the safety and soundness of a financial institution, or B, if the offense affects a financial institution and the defendant derives more than $1 million in gross receipts. For purposes of today's discussion, I will only be addressing whether Mr. Collins' offense affected the Gateway Association, the financial institution at issue in this case, and whether his offense substantially jeopardized the safety and soundness of the Gateway Association. Subpart B of this enhancement intends to punish harsher or more severely those offenses that victimize financial institutions. Mr. Collins, the Gateway Association, was not victimized in this case. Gateway was a vehicle, the shell, if you will, through which Mr. Collins and others perpetrated their fraud. The Gateway Association was the Ponzi scheme in this case.
But corporations are separate, quote, persons, close quote, from the people who form them, and there certainly was a time that the corporate entity, Gateway, had a lot of money.
That is true, Your Honor.
Now, what it did with that money might eventually have been an honest thing or a dishonest thing, and obviously with dishonest people managing it, it turned out to be dishonest, but it was a separate entity.
Gateway was a separate entity, Your Honor. It was created, I think we were arguing that it was created as a Ponzi scheme.
That was the purpose of its creators, but it doesn't mean that it wasn't an entity at some point.
That's true, Your Honor. We're not arguing that the association wasn't an entity.
So you're arguing that the motive of the person who goes to the Secretary of State's office to get articles of incorporation determines whether that corporation can be defrauded or not. If the people have pure motives, then it can be, and if people have impure motives, then no fraud is possible.
No, Your Honor. I think what we're arguing is that subpart B was only intended to if the financial institution itself was victimized.
Would you admit this is a investment company?
Yes, Your Honor.
And that investment companies in the broad definition of financial institution are included, aren't they?
Investment companies are not included, Your Honor, under 18 U.S.C. Section 20. Small business investment companies are...
What about the guidelines? I thought that once you get to an investment company, that does come under the umbrella. You say it does not, of the financial institution.
Yeah, I say that it does not, Your Honor, come under the umbrella of a financial institution pursuant to these guidelines. But even if the court were to find that it did, the court would still ask for exception subpart B, still have to answer the second question, which is whether Mr. Collins' offense affected the financial institution. And we're arguing that even if the court finds that an investment company is a financial institution for purposes of subpart B, that his offense did not affect the Gateway Association, as that word is meant under the guidelines.
Well, it sucked all the money out of it.
Yes, Your Honor. The Gateway Association did not have any money after the end of Mr. Collins' offense. But that was the purpose of the Gateway Association. The Gateway Association was created to entice investors to give the association money. The association was a Ponzi scheme. That was its purpose.
So if the purpose is to fail as an entity, which of course it had to, then that's okay.
Is it, for purposes of this guideline, for subpart B of the guidelines, the association wasn't victimized. The association, unlike Bank One in the United States versus Hart, was never left, was not an innocent actor left to make good on Mr. Collins' actions. The association was the vehicle for the fraud. So it's not okay in the general sense. And Mr. Collins, there were, he received a number of enhancements for his offenses. But as for this enhancement, the fact that Gateway Association had some money at one point and at the end of the fraud didn't have any more money does not mean that the Gateway Association was victimized. Secondly, Your Honor, the Gateway Association was not, I mean, Mr. Collins' offense did not substantially jeopardize the safety and soundness of the Gateway Association. The Gateway Association was a Ponzi scheme, and so therefore it never enjoyed any safety or soundness pursuant to subpart A of these guidelines. It was a fraud from its inception, so from the beginning it was always unsafe and unsound. It was never solvent. Although it had money, it was never a solvent entity. Solvency presupposes that the Gateway Association has the ability that was going to pay back its debt. The Gateway Association was created for the specific purpose to not pay any of its obligations.
It did pay some of
it. It did make some small payments.
And that's the only way you can keep a Ponzi scheme going.
Exactly. It had to keep inducing other investors to give money so that they would believe that they would receive this 1,200% rate of return on investment so that the Ponzi scheme could be successful. And so that was the purpose of the Gateway Association. And so it was never solvent in the way that we believe that word is meant to apply towards subpart A of the sentencing guidelines. Your Honor, we believe because the Gateway Association was not affected and was not victimized by Mr. Collins' offense, and secondly, because Mr. Collins' offense did not substantially jeopardize the safety or soundness of the Ponzi scheme, that the district court committed error. You know, I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Okay, fine. Mr. Kubitowski.
May it please the court. Good morning, honors. My name is Steve Kubitowski, representing the United States. Let me first briefly address Mr. Spade's point that investment companies are not included under the guidelines. He said that they would not be included within the umbrella of the guidelines. The court doesn't have to, we would respectfully disagree with that. Application Note 14 to those guidelines specifically include the definition of financial institution to include investment companies. It's right there in black and white. The only argument that the defense can credibly make with respect to whether or not this is included under the umbrella is with respect to section B6B, subpart B, where the institution is affected and the defendant obtains more than $1 million.
Instead of incorporating this entity in the, whatever, 1996 or 97, whatever it was, it would have just created a fictitious company and not incorporated it and run all the money through that. Would this enhancement imply?
If it was strictly a fictitious company?
Mm-hmm.
They've got a Gateway Financial. Is it went down to Kinko's and printed letterhead to Gateway Financial? Did people send them?
Your Honor, it's an interesting question. I think in theory, there may be a point where the institution or investment company at issue has no furnishings, no semblance of a legitimate corporation.
Well, let's suppose that's the case.
If that's the case, perhaps you can make an argument that this institution has.
What do you think? Instead of incorporating this thing, you just, out of thin air, use a a name that looks like a company, and you use that to run your Ponzi scheme.
If that were the facts alone, Your Honor, I think, under the circumstances, the enhancements would not apply. However, that's not what we have here, Your Honor. Here you have a company identical to the facts in Randy that was incorporated, maintained corporate offices, solicited investors through brokers with high-tech promotional materials. The facts are virtually indistinguishable from Randy, and on that basis, I believe the enhancements certainly apply. And again, with respect to Mr. Chaffee's second argument, that you can't be a vehicle or and a victim at the same time, you can't square his position with the Randy decision. In that instance, it was this court made it abundantly clear that Randy, that the Canadian Trade Bank in Randy was a fictional entity. Throughout the course of the opinion and its discussion of the facts, it referred to the phrase bank in quotation marks. There was no question in this court's mind that the Canadian Trade Bank in Randy was a fictional entity. Nevertheless, it held that if you hold yourself out as a legitimate investment vehicle, investment company, the enhancement does apply. And we would assert that on the basis of that decision alone, the district court decision should be upheld. Investment companies are included under the umbrella of Application Note 14. One point of clarification. In the reply brief, Mr. Chaffee points out that it's not clear that the which subpart that the court used in enhancing the defendant's sentence. I believe the record makes clear that the district court found that both equally applied, alternatively applied. The district court's specific language was that she found not only did the defendant's conduct affect the Gateway Association, but it destroyed it. It rendered it insolvent. And that's an important distinction because if this court finds that the latter prong, the Jeopardy prongs, subpart A applies, you never even have to reach the Tomasino argument about retroactivity. It doesn't apply because Tomasino, by its own terms, was limited to subpart B on the effect and the $1 million derived by the defendant. And I believe that either does apply. And with respect to subpart B, even that applies because the background note was subsequently corrected to reflect that investment companies should be included. And that can be applied retroactively, consistent with this court's well-settled precedent. Unless there are any further questions, I yield the remainder of my time to the court.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Chaffee, do you have anything further?
Yes, there are just a few additional points.
Your Honor, with respect to United States v. Randy, the defendant in that case never questioned, or the question wasn't whether the defendant's offense affected the institution or the fraudulent the bank in that case, or whether the offense in that case substantially jeopardized the safety and soundness of that bank. The question
was the vehicle for the fraud in Randy, wasn't it?
Beg your pardon, Your Honor?
It was a clear vehicle for the fraud, similar to the way Gateway is.
It was, Your Honor, but the defendant never raised the issue of whether his offense affected that financial institution. Granted, the district court in Randy did find that, but the defendant in Randy did not, his appeal wasn't based on that issue. His question was whether the fraudulent company could be a financial institution, and whether both subparts A and B had to both be applied at the same time. Your Honor, we believe that an offense does not affect the Gateway Association was not affected by Mr. Collins' offense because the Gateway Association was the Ponzi scheme in this matter. It wasn't victimized as Bank One was in Hart. It wasn't left to make good. It wasn't an innocent actor or innocent entity left to make good to these investors. The Gateway Association was the Ponzi scheme. In addition, Your Honor, we believe that Mr. Collins' offense did not substantially jeopardize the safety and soundness of the Gateway Association because from its inception, it was unsafe and unsound, and it was never solvent. Therefore, Your Honor, we ask that this court reverse and remand this case back to the district court for resentencing. Thank you.
All right, thanks very much. The case will be taken under advisement.